power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, I want to play this game so bad.
One. Deadline.
Today is towel day.
It's absolutely towel day. Look it up.
And this is episode 36 of
and
Diplomacy
I'm Eric
Cast.
Mead.
Why? Why would you already ruin it? We're 12 seconds in, and it's already all screwed up. I'm Eric Mead.
I'm Nathan Barnes.
Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy.
Diplomacy, I need that.
This is episode 36 of it.
36, wow.
36? Way over the hill.
Yeah.
Way over the hill.
It's like we got in a shark, jumped a shark, and then both of those sharks jumped another shark.
That's right.
Yeah.
While in a refrigerator in a nuclear explosion.
It's a lot. It's a big refrigerator full of sharks.
That's
hurtling
really
space.
I think we just had the title of our show.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's
a big refrigerator full of sharks. That's where we're at with this. This is a normal, ordinary episode of Diplomacy Cast. No more silliness.
No tricks.
No 4-hour interview extravaganzabrations of the hobbification of diplomacy. None of that. We're done with all
you
that.
You just get the normal.
You'll probably never get another one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 68, maybe,
because
it's 2 times 34. No, probably not that.
Yeah.
No, we'll probably never do that again.
Yeah.
We're just back to regular old episodes.
Yeah. So you're in for a treat. This is you know, back to regular program. This is what you pay for.
That's right. The big bucks.
Yeah. Somebody
In today's show, we have a little hot off the press.
You mean opening negotiations?
No, I mean hot off the press.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Start your own damn podcast if you want to call it opening negotiations.
I thought I did.
No, not you. Not you. Not you. No, we're calling this hot off the press, this segment.
Oh, okay.
There's been a lot of resources invested in branding hot off the press as hot off the press, and we're not just going to turn around and leave that behind.
I'm pretty sure I can edit that bumper. I'll just...
dare you.
I'll
double
do
dog
I'm going to do it on my phone.
Double dog dare you. We're going to... Yeah, a little bit of that, a little bit of chatter.
Yeah.
Catch up on the tournament scene without doing a whole thing on it, but... we got some power plays for you.
Yep.
We're going to go back to the well another time and talk about poor, ignored so far on this show, Germany and an alliance of theirs.
Yeah.
With France, specifically.
Yes, with France.
We're talking sea lion on this episode.
Yep.
And
long-term sea lion. And to go with that, we're going to get we're gonna have a guest on like we have done in years past.
When we're done plotting ways to eliminate England.
Yes, we will talk to someone from there. Who also happened to have won WDC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a thing that happened. Mr. Toby Harris, champion of WDC.
And if this is news to you, you really should kind of catch up on diplomacy news a little bit more than our podcast, because that happened a couple months ago.
Yeah.
So maybe get out there.
It wasn't. Well, all right, by the time this episode shows up,
sure. Yeah,
maybe it was a couple months ago in the future.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and get Nathan the help that he desperately needs, and we'll be back with some stuff. We just have a little bit of miscellaneous.
Yeehaw!
Oh, Nathan really likes miscellaneous things. He gets really
love
excited.
Him.
No, we're going to talk about just upcoming things. It occurred to me when we were talking about just a second ago that maybe we should be a resource for news, but. You know,
ding 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 ding
ding ding ding ding ding ding ding. Yeah. Okay. So tournaments that are coming up. The next one's coming up in just a couple weeks. It's in Chicago, the 13th through the 14th. Well, I guess it's the 12th through the 14th.
Are they calling it Weasel Moot?
I think they are calling it Weasel Moot 9.
All right.
Yeah. So it's happening in Chicago.
Chicago.
You can just go to windycityweasels.org. Get all the deets. But I believe it's at the Crown Plaza. Nope, it's not at the Crown Plaza. Excuse me, that's just one of the places.
Sorry, this is now that we're in the breaking news business, we don't always have all the facts up front.
It's a three-round event, and it's at actually the University of Illinois Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's good.
That's the thing. What else? DixieCon just happened.
Yeah, DixieCon just happened.
Congratulations, Adam Siegel.
Yeah, winner chicken dinner.
Yeah.
I bet they had some barbecue.
I'm sure that they did. Mm. I'm quite certain that that's the case. We have a yet unnamed and undated event that may be occurring in Portland in about September as sort of a dry run of something growing in Portland.
Yeah.
Festering, you may say.
Festering is an excellent word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's latent.
Yeah.
It has a lot of desire.
Sort of a zygote of an event.
And then across the water over in Australia, July 3rd through the 5th is the Victorian Diplomacy Championships in Melbourne.
Those of you down under or with a lot of vacation time.
Yeah. So if you're interested in getting to know a little bit more about that, if you're maybe you're going to be over there or something, or maybe you're going to plan an entire trip around this, there's a Google group for DANS, DAANS. It's the Diplomacy Association of Australia and New Zealand, and you can find all the info there.
Also, I want to say probably an industrial band.
Probably.
Yeah,
I think that's Danzig.
Yeah, maybe that.
You think maybe Danzig had like a...
Bond.
They had a German offshoot.
I am enjoying my song. This is Dons.
The German Fonz. Anyway, so if you want to learn a little bit more about that, that's out there. That's, I think, that's coming up through September, and I'm sure there's, we're going to have an episode before then.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely get more information about that.
We're really lucky if this comes out before Weasel Moon. Hey, coming up last week is Weasel Moon.
No, it'll be up.
Yeah.
It's towel day. We got plenty of time.
That's true. That's a good point. Let's see. What else? That might be up for upcoming tournaments that anyone's asked us to shout out anyway. Nathan's baby continues to grow.
Yeah.
There's some breaking news for you.
She's bigger.
She is.
Yeah.
She's larger and fussier,
mm-hmm.
which is probably a good thing, mm-hmm. I would think. Yeah.
You're all super interested in that, so now you know.
I visited another Supply Center since we met. Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, I was in Con, and it was cooler than Liverpool. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah,
really,
just the one I talked about before. Yeah, it was very exciting.
What's the 10,000 foot overview of it? I mean,
it's really enormous. Yeah. I saw both the Aegean and the Black at various points throughout my trip.
Nice.
So it was very diplomacy centric. It indeed has no coasts. I can see how that happened.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah, yeah. It's full of cats and people and ancient buildings.
The cats got the first billing there.
There's a lot of cats. Awful lot of cats.
You basically went and visited an enormous cat toy. Is what you're saying.
Yeah, like a 25 million person cat toy.
Yeah.
There's not really any mice or anything for some reason is another thing I'll add to that. I made it to the Black. I don't know. What else? Nate Cockrell, who was our person who actually did Constantinople for the episode 34, told me that Top Copy Palace would be really cool, and he totally stabbed.
Yeah.
Totally wasn't cool. No. It was just like some big, casino? Rich, douchey guy's house or something. It was just, like 500 years worth of rich, douchey guy house and harem and everything else.
I really thought you were going to say hairy and not harem.
No.
Like,
no,
as in,
no.
Body hair?
No.
No?
Okay. There was, we went in the eunuch area of Coffee Palace. Yeah. They had their own little area.
Nice.
It sort of felt like a video game. Like, I was going to have to smash through eunuchs, and then there would be, the boss eunuch, and then
to
the sultan later.
You need to talk to a bunch of villagers first in order to get the right information which eunuch to smash.
Exactly.
Yeah, and otherwise you can't find the
smash pots and look for rupees.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I probably should have done that. That's all. We just thought we'd check in and say hi. It's been a while, listeners.
Yeah,
it has been a little while, and then you can put another little check mark on that diplomacy map you have hanging up in your room where you're trying to visit all the supply centers, because that's right. The kind of weirdo you are.
I prefer to put a naked picture of myself instead of a check mark.
Okay.
Just glue that on there. Okay. So yeah, three down, 31 to go. Better go take some more pictures.
You want to have the right picture.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. Yeah, not
true.
Just
it's not a naked picture of you in the supply center.
No.
It's just like
me in my apartment.
Exactly. Because you want to get the lighting right.
Yeah. That's what I'm going for.
True. Mm-hmm. All right. So opening negotiations. We have a...
hot off the... Nice try. Nice try. Hot off the press. We'll just go ahead and play the bumper right now, even though we've just got the one email.
Okay. Hot off the press? Yeah, people don't use the press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
If we just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
Okay, cool. Oh, please, I insist.
What?
No,
this is hot off the opening negotiations. Got it.
Yeah, right.
So, this comes from Timothy Jones, who I believe is an Australian player. Reached out to us via the Facebooks. There's another way to reach us, not just the Gmail.
Oh, I didn't do that this time. If you're still listening and you still wish to contact us.
You could use diplomacycast@gmail.com.
You could go to facebook.com/diplomacycast and join our fun Facebook family.
Yeah. That's 150 players that follow our little
that's right.
Page.
Get in on the ground floor while it's still cool.
Yeah.
Before
it jumps the shark in a refrigerator.
Yeah, right. There's iTunes that you can subscribe to, and if you say nice things about us on the iTunes, then
you help the hobby
somehow profit from that. Yes.
Well, we don't profit. The hobby profits.
That's
because
correct.
Then Apple realizes it's something. They promote it. They use their dollars to promote
right.
it. And if you would like diplomacy in each and every home and in many countries around the world, you might want to say nice things.
You're going to have to leave a lot of positive comments. But every house is built with a single stone. So
yes. So anyway, get cracking, you internet trolls.
That's all.
And there's a bunch of you that spend a lot of time on the Facebook writing stuff. You can write something nice over at the Apples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's he had a quick question after listening to our opening negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Jones wants us to talk a little bit about the espionage and order etiquette in face-to-face games. Specifically, things like listening in on conversations, reading orders over players' shoulders, allies that ask you to show them their orders before they're turning in, pulling a Chris Martin and putting in multiple sets of orders. And, you know, I think he's correct in his observation that he thinks that there's some new players don't kind of know what this is about, what they're supposed to do. And there's value in sort of, we all get socialized and culturalized. And
it's a great question.
Yeah.
It really is.
You know, when in life we know what we're not supposed to do because your parents teach you and whatever. But if you walk into something like a diplomacy tournament and you don't know... You don't know whether to be offended or not, or push back, or what the mores are.
The answer is that if you get caught attempting to read over somebody's shoulder, they'll usually just throw a baseball at you at your temple the next inning, and so it all polices itself.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm thinking baseball. Aren't
I? Yeah, yeah, I bet you are. I bet you are.
No,
I'm sure there's some people that get that reference, and I understand that there's baseballs in baseball.
Yeah,
I got that part.
Yeah, sorry, every other country in the world for that joke. And also most of America.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like baseball either?
That's right.
Fine.
Fine.
Yeah. We'll edit that joke out.
No, we're not. So, I read the question.
Mm.
So then I'm interested in your thoughts because I know what I think, but.
Yeah, well, I know what I think too.
You want to share it?
Yeah. No, we're done. We know what we think.
We know what we think.
And you know,
if you'd like to learn more, please dial 1995 in 3 easy payments.
That you know that. No, I think it's all fair game.
Yeah.
In a tournament environment. And I think that maybe we don't do a good enough job as a hobby, like making it clear to the new player that we think that it's all fair game.
Yeah.
But we think that it's all fair game. Except for whatever reason, there's the one sacred thing, which is you can't ever look at anyone's orders once they're in the box. Somehow that'll get you hit in the head with a baseball. But honestly, none of the rest of it will.
Yeah.
Like that's like the one thing that you can't do. But even in a tournament environment, house game environment. I think it's all very much in the spirit of the game to attempt to read over someone's shoulder, attempt to listen in on their conversation, attempt to, what are some of the other things? I don't think I heard anything on that list that I was like, no, you just can't do
requiring
that.
Your ally to see your their order, like you can, you know, that thing where you're like, well, let me see your order.
And that one's a little funny. People but differ on that one, but
that's I mean, we'll talk about it, but that's stupid.
We'll come back to that one.
Because that's I mean, but what? Yeah, but we'll come back to it.
The espionage stuff. I think it's on you to make sure you're not getting spied on.
Absolutely.
Because it honestly, like, even if people are trying to be ethical, sometimes they hear you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and quote unquote ethical, it would have to be their own ethics, because I don't think there's anything like built into the spirit of the game that says no, it's wrong to behave this way. Right? I think most diplomacy players anywhere, honestly, I think that to some people that's part of the fun. Don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, no,
like,
absolutely.
Just the sneaky, underhanded part of the game, like, I totally overheard what he said. I mean, like,
yeah, sure, that's fine.
In a game where you're occasionally rewarded for lying, how much worse can it be to try and eavesdrop, right?
I think the eavesdrop is definitely on the super acceptable end of the spectrum, and we go, and I guess because the other pole we put in the ground is, you know, going into the box before the orders are read and reading the orders is
that's the one that's not okay.
Okay, so that there's our spectrum. There's just eavesdropping and then all the way to that end.
It goes like murdering someone's grandmother, looking in the box, and then everything else.
You can't. So I actually do agree with you that from an espionage standpoint, pretty much everything is fair game. I think that looking over someone's shoulder is inadvisable. Just because it's awkward. Now, there have certainly been situations in which light was shining in certain ways and you can see through someone's order pad they don't do things well. There's a situation in which you happen to glance over while walking by. Fine. You can set up those situations, but, you know.
Let me give you a hypothetical. You and I are fighting on a board.
Sure.
Okay. And I'm England, you're Germany or something. And we have a guess. It's all the negotiation has happened. You and I talk to each other. You and I both talk to France to try and persuade them to do different things. We've talked to Russia. We've talked to Turkey to see what the plan is. And like, we've done all our negotiation part. It's those extra couple of minutes where we know that we have tactics to do.
Yeah.
And we're both just sitting at the board. You're staring at the position. I'm staring at the opposite of the position you're staring at. I'm staring at my country. You're staring at yours. We have tactics that we have to do. If you have placed your pad just flat on the table, you've written half your orders and you're agonizing over another half of your orders, and I am staring at the board and then I glance over at your pad, which you haven't put your hand over, I haven't done anything wrong, have I?
No, not at all. You haven't done anything wrong. I'm merely saying it's not advisable because you can't do it very well. Like, it's just, it's awkward to, like, try and look over someone's shoulder and have them not figure it out. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I just think it's a waste of your time.
I would say, like, launching sort of super spy little kid missions to, try and get to somebody's orders is probably, if you're really legitimately using stealth.
Yeah.
Like, you're probably, acting a little goofy. Like, there's probably something better you could be doing, like, trying to persuade somebody to do something.
I want to be clear that it's not something...
Okay.
From an ethical standpoint, is it okay to do that? Yes. Is it advisable? Probably not. I mean, in your scenario, I think it's a great time. Mm-hmm. In that scenario, I would say, unless the person across from you is, you know, really tired or really new, they're probably putting it there so that you'll do a certain thing and they're going to change it, which is what I would do.
Right.
I would, I left half of it. Yeah, You know, I think you have to question that sort of thing. But from an order etiquette, it's fine.
It's
when you get into things like, and this is why I've had the two polls, his example of putting in multiple sets of orders, that's not espionage. That's not using
That's sort of trying to, I don't know, there's a little griefing, almost. Is that the right video game word for it? That's sort of like trying to break the system a little bit.
That's you're getting close. You're getting closer to looking at the orders in the box end when you're putting in multiple orders to try and influence a situation or trying to use ambiguity to gain information you wouldn't otherwise be able to get.
And of course, in that case, you're taking a risk that the tournament director walks over and someone says, "Hey, put in two sets of orders," and the tournament director says, "Oh, well, you're just NMR. Like none of your orders count this season."
Right. In that scenario, there is a rule that dictates that, and the most generous reading of which is all the conflicting orders are removed and only the non-conflicting orders are read.
That's right.
Some people will just say you put in two sets of orders. They're both void, and that.
But even having said that, I would say that among tournament goers, and I think it's fair to be honest here, there is a culture of sort of, respect for somebody who pulls off a truly audacious exploit like that.
Sure. Which is why I made a crack about Mr. Martin at the beginning of this.
Yeah. Mr. Martin or Mr. Person and his, remember the thing from the postal game where he actually chopped up the guy's press to make it look like it was something totally bad. I mean, or the Mr. Martin, the time that he persuaded the tournament director to let him have an additional piece on the board.
I'm going to put this Dutchman right here.
Because the tournament director didn't actually count the centers because he seemed so sure that he had that many. Or the stories that you hear about the guy who writes four sets of orders and puts them in four different pockets, waits until all the other orders get read, and then someone says, "Hey, I didn't get the German orders. Oh, whoops, I'm sorry, they're right here in my pocket." And then he gives it, you know, like things like that. I don't know if you're really trying them or not, but I feel like if you get away with it, some people might tell the story in a kind of, "Wow, I can't believe what that guy got away with," kind of a way. So I don't know that there's much you can do about it. Just don't trust diplomacy players, I guess. I think it's a fair thing to say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if someone's asking for an answer here, are these okay? The answer I get from Diplomacy Cast is yeah.
Yeah.
All of these things are not only they're fair game.
I would agree.
But the other flip side of that is just because it's okay to do something doesn't mean you have to just accept it. You know, you got all sorts of stuff. Your repertoire, you know, you have all the tools to trade. You can freak out about it. I mean, that's a perfectly legitimate response.
You can actually throw a baseball at the guy's temple.
Go nuts. If someone peeks over your shoulder, that's one of the reasons I'm saying it's inadvisable. Someone's just gonna maybe freak out and like,
"I'm never gonna work with him for the rest of the game. I'm not gonna work with him on any board because he's a weasel."
I'm gonna change this entire alliance of this game. I'm gonna like use it. Like there are players that will use a little thing like that to just upend the dynamics of the game.
Absolutely.
So you just because the etiquette is such that it's not verboten doesn't mean that people aren't going to react extremely strongly, or that you shouldn't react extremely strongly. You should, because if you can quickly see a path to where you want to go by exploiting that, that's also a-okay and, you know,
absolutely
within the, you know, realms of etiquette and mores and all that.
On the specific subject of the eavesdrop, I guess one sort of scenario that I feel like comes up fairly often in the game that it's if you're not doing this one, you're not trying. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, that old thing. Sort of mid to late game when there's maybe a couple of coalitions bashing against each other, either to like try and break a stalemate line or to try, you know, that whole thing where it's sort of devolved into team diplomacy. There's some negotiations, but they're not that serious, and people are just kind of both trying to just like two groups are just sort of trying to win.
Yeah, it's just you're trying to outgroup think the other side.
Right. I would say fairly often there's a situation where like one team gets up to go and talk about their orders. The other team has complicated tactics to do, and so they're happy for the opportunity to actually sit and look at the board and discuss a couple of different things. Pretty often when that happens, you the team that's sitting and discussing the possible tactics on the board might be so engaged in that that you can just take a quick buzz by them and see if you hear an interesting keyword like support to Bohemia or something like that. And then you can just kind of stroll on back to your team and be like, I feel like they're going to go with the support and attack in Bohemia. I overheard. That's their fault.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely.
You're not getting hit in the baseball, for that one. Right?
That's right. Eavesdropping it's super common as well. All of us have sat at a table when no one was, if you're just on the, you drew the short straw, right? Mm-hmm. It's 1902 and everybody goes off in pairs and it's just you at the table. And you can already sense that you don't have any friends here. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're Austria and you're getting run in on. There's a sea lion. Maybe who knows what it is. Mm-hmm. But one of the things you do is you kind of look at every single, no one goes very far and you pick out who you can pick out and especially if it's a critical moment, you could be, okay, they're definitely, I can tell from what they're saying, what they're gesturing, what their mouths are moving, that they're talking about this, I'm going to defend that way. Yep. In that scenario, you have no other tools.
Absolutely.
No one will talk to you. Absolutely. They probably will talk to you, but you feel like no one will talk to you.
Right.
You feel like you're getting nowhere, you're frustrated. Look at what other people are doing. It's perfectly fine.
Not a problem. Yeah, and I mean, how different is that from just trying to figure out who's talking to whom in a game?
Zero.
And that's useful information, too, even if you can't hear what they're saying. So,
It's a private negotiation. If you want to make it more private, you have to take steps.
Go a few more steps down the hall or something like that.
If you really
don't want to be heard.
And the other side of that, and I think it's important to quickly note, mm-hmm. is, assume that people are doing that, and every once in a while you need to put on a show.
Every
once in a while you realize that the audience is there, and you do things to manipulate the perception of what's going on.
Yep. So, a very simple one of those that comes to mind is when you're doing a Western triple, but you don't want to make it look like a Western triple.
Sure.
Don't stand in three.
Yeah.
Don't all stand there and be like, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. Maybe the France is just like, all right, screw you guys, and storms off, even though he was like, okay, I'm going to go, all right, screw you guys right now.
Yeah.
And then, all right, screw you guys, and then storms off, right? Or they just talk in pairs as opposed to threes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you have to think about the optics when you're playing face-to-face. And that's actually something that's pretty different from online.
Oh, yeah. Right? You never have to worry about that.
There's different kinds of optics that are in that. You can, forward people conversations that you thought you were having in private and things like that, which is sort of a different mechanism. But it's just always thinking about the optics, always thinking about what your body language is saying when you're talking to a person. Maybe Nathan and I are the best allies ever. Maybe I stand in a way or gesture in a way that makes him think that I'm not happy with the situation where I am or vice versa. I think it is sort of worth saying that I said it at the beginning, I'm going to say it again. Maybe we don't say that enough to new players. Maybe we put it in the house rules in tournaments or something like that, or maybe we should, in order to say, just know that nobody here is going to honorably fail to eavesdrop or peek at your orders, so it's your job to cover them up, and feel free to try and spy on theirs too, they expect it.
Right.
Might be a nice little disclaimer so that nobody gets their feelings hurt at their first tournament, and maybe we don't say it out loud enough.
This reminds me of an idea I had a little while back, and we'll just put a pin in this. We're going to come back to it some other episode, but not as something to talk about, but something to maybe propose to the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought for a while now that there's some benefit to having a newbie boot camp. Mm. Somebody you've never played a tournament before, come here an hour before registration, and we're going to have some folks from the local hobby, maybe not the TD, maybe somebody that he or she is appointed, maybe it's the TD, I don't know, it doesn't matter.
Don't worry, it'll be Doug Moore, it'll be fine.
Just a little bit hey, what's what? Hey, maybe they'll just play an episode of Diplomacy Cast. Whatever it is.
Ah.
Maybe they'll play hey, watch this, just so that we're all on the same page of what's going on.
Mm.
I actually think there's a lot of value to that, and a lot of community building. And hey, we recognize you're coming into into this sphere. You may or may not be a little uncomfortable with it. You may have questions that you don't know how to articulate. Let's see if we can answer a bunch of them or prompt you to answer, to, you know, what it, questions
you're right that we should come back to this in a future
episode. Yeah.
Because my first thought when you were just saying that was, if it was my first tournament, there's no way I'm going to that.
Oh, really?
Because I don't want anyone to know that it's my first tournament. But
that's why I was thinking, like, do it ahead of time.
Yeah.
And, like, do it with tournament organizers who are maybe motivated to keep that private.
Maybe, anyway. Maybe if we give them, like, Fidelio masks or something. They're like, tend to...
Just starts getting progressively creepier.
Gets weird. I feel like there was one bit that we said we're going to come back to that at the end that we thought was sort of...
No. Yes, there was. It had to do with your ally seeing your orders, demanding your ally show you the orders, or vice versa, your ally demanding seeing your orders.
Yeah, so that's something that's, like, not in the realm of, like, voluntary or involuntary. That's purely voluntary, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. There's not anybody who will say, you must do this or you must not do this in any situation. I think it's optional. And
what do you mean? You mean, like, there's no tournament in which that's a requirement?
There's no there's no etiquette in which that's a requirement.
Okay.
I've met people who simply say, I don't do that on principle.
Yeah, okay, yes.
I've met people who are happy to do that. I've met people who are weird about it. And of course, like, you can literally, like, if there's a real trust issue and you're trying to win somebody over, you could certainly make the proposal, let's both stand next to the box, write our orders, show them to each other, or even physically trade pads. And then when we're both satisfied with what the other person is doing, throw them in the box. There's no rule that says you can't do that. There's no rule that says that you must do that. It's up to the individual.
Yeah, and it is up to the... Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I'll just tell you what my personal values
are.
You
probably hate it, right?
No, I don't like it, but there are certain times in which I'm absolutely willing to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's purely context. I'm definitely knee-jerk, like, no, we don't do that. Not when people ask me, and also when people offer. I usually decline.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't want to see it. Because I feel like there's more leverage for me if I don't. I feel like there's more room later. Because once you get to the point where you're demanding to see somebody's orders, there's no further trust that could be shown. Like, if I don't believe you at that point, there's really no further down that road I can go. And I think that this is just a personal view on it. Like, if I can't show trust, if I'm not willing to trust you, there's no way I'm going to be able to build a relationship further down.
I guess I agree with that, and I guess I'm not the sort of person who demands to see somebody's orders.
Yeah, I almost never do
for that reason. Like, show me the order, and you've got yourself a deal. I mean, maybe if I'm down to one, and I'm just, like, in the mode of, like, I'm trying to punish somebody, and they ask me for something, like, to do with my last piece.
Right, or you're, like, in a situation in which someone has done this to you, like, 6 times in a row.
Yeah.
And you're back at it again, and you're like, no, I'm not going to do it. And they're like, I will just show you the order this time. There might be a situation like that.
I'll frequently offer. Not like every game, but maybe every third game I'll find a situation where it makes sense to offer. To show an order I truly intend to write, because it's sort of like one of my things about the game that I find so fascinating is that it's sometimes harder to get people to believe you when you're telling them the truth than it is when you're lying to them. Like, lying is like, haha, I got one over on that guy, but, like, whatever. Like, that's not hard, and it's not that interesting to like, lie to somebody and then do something else. The trust part is the fun part of the game, and if I sort of unconsciously or consciously come to the conclusion that the guy I'm talking to has no reason to believe me, he's never gonna believe me, sometimes I'll pull that one out.
Yeah.
Just to be like, here, it's right here on the pad that I am now turning in, and, like, don't even give him a choice.
Yeah.
Just be like, I already wrote it. It's in the box. There you go.
Yeah.
It can be powerful.
Oh, yeah, I can't. Especially, there, like I said, I'm just saying my baseline is I'm not particularly into it.
I agree with
you. There are so many scenarios in which it has happened. When you're down to one or two dots and you're just, you know, you are trying to close this deal. Mm. I need you to do this. Here it is. I wrote it. Put it in. This is awesome for you.
Now I'm going to go play Magic for a while.
Here. I'm not going to do anything. You can watch this. Mm-hmm. It's fine. You can hold it. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, it's all yours. It's good. Hey, if you want, as a matter of fact, if you want to change it, go ahead. Just go turn it in for me when you're done.
Because if you, you know, I think I've said that. I'd be like, if you do change it, my game is gone. And if you don't take this, my game is gone. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
There.
Right.
If you want help, yeah, yeah, yeah.
One more thing on that, and then I think we're done with this email. Yeah. We've been going 20 minutes on this, but
it's a good email.
It came up at the last diplomacy thing I was at, and I think it's worth saying just because it goes back to the first part of this that we were talking about, and it's part of this part. Interesting fact: a lot of times, if you've written something totally different on your pad, but you stick it in their face and be like, see, I'm helping you, they don't really read it.
Yeah, they can't.
Because they figure if you're sticking the pad in their face, you wrote what they wanted you to write. And so if it's like, I'm not going to Bulgaria, and you've got like Serbia to Bulgaria already written, and you just wave it in their face, like, look, I'm not going to Bulgaria. They glance at it and they go, okay. And it says Serbia to Bulgaria.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it also helps if they have handwriting like yours, which is almost illegible.
Also true. Also true. But
because you're confronted with that, and like it's like foreign script, and you're kind of staring at it blankly, and you're like, yeah, it's got to be there. I can't take the time to try and like refocus my eyes.
I will go ahead and say that I have successfully done this before.
Yeah.
Probably two or three times.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, or else the one that you want them to see is written on there, but then there's like five other orders that are all stabbing.
Yeah.
And they don't read those ones. You're like, see, Serbia to Bulgaria, right there, written on the pad, and then all the rest of them are not what they want at all. And then you just turn it in.
With gusto.
With gusto. With
gusto.
Be all enthusiastic when you do it that way. That's a fun trick.
Okay, so next we're gonna talk a little bit about FG. Or GF?
FG.
GF? FG? Which one?
We'll go GF because Germany's the one we've neglected so far, so we want this to be Germany. This is
our GG. Yeah, yeah.
GG. Mate.
Ah.
Yeah. Back after this.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
France, Germany.
Power plays.
Sorry. Power plays. There we go.
Sorry. No.
France, Germany.
Germany, France. Germany's the power we've not...
Yeah,
talked about. So, you're familiar with the format of this by now. We sort of kind of go through the same sort of couple of questions. We talk about, you know, scenarios in which the alliance will work, in this case, Germany, France, where you might want to consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Identifying those situations, and then we go on to talk about how to
make it happen in the early game,
then how to make it happen in the mid game, and then considerations for the end game, and then finally the two-way consideration.
Yeah,
that's possible. So
spoiler alert, not possible.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, I know if you want to skip to the end, we're not going to have a big double thumbs up on the on the two-way for the Germany France. So I guess. Situations you want to be looking for. Mm-hmm. You want to be looking at a board in 01, and you know, I guess before I start that way, before you're like, I guess there's two situations.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the board and it's telling me FG, and then maybe you perhaps are coming to the board and you're like, man, I just really want to work with France for whatever reason. So you like the guy, maybe you know, the gal, or you might want to just try something
England
a little different.
The tournament leader.
Or you just heard this really great podcast about it, so you want to give it a whirl.
Yes.
So I guess to extol the benefits of it first, from the German perspective, it's nice to have a friend. You know where it's going.
Any friend will do.
Any friend will do.
Mm-hmm.
France is probably the country that can run in on you most quickly. Having them, aligning with them definitely delays some things. It also generally settles lowland disputes, so you can probably figure out who gets Belgium, which is a great thing to have figured out before fall 1901.
Right.
So there's, from the German side, there's a lot of good stuff there. From the French side, you know, if your goal is just to take out England because you've decided an EF is not what you want to do, and mm-hmm. like you want to just remove a fleet presence so that you can own that fleet presence. It's, mm-hmm. it's great for you as well.
Yeah. And then the downside that both of you will be thinking about at the time is that it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Right? England is really hard to dig out, mm-hmm. and it's nice when you do, because like then you have nobody at your backside, but the actual like actually out guessing until Liverpool, London, and Edinburgh and Norway all don't belong to him anymore.
Or even just two of the three. It takes a really long time, and the rest of the East has a lot more time to mature, figure their stuff out, and mm-hmm. be undoing everything that you've worked so hard to create.
So now part of that is the Mr. Bresson's glorious sea lion tactic, the one that really can make this alliance go if you just decide, like, pre-Spring 01, like,
that's what you want to do.
Let's just do this. So step one, if you're not familiar with the Sea Lion or you need a refresher, step one, France tricks England into doing something else and just grabs the channel.
Right. Ideally, Russia. You've convinced Russia to go north. And
we'll come back to that. Step two is in the fall, the gambit is somehow England is still hornswoggled and bamboozled and confused about what's going on, and you manage to find a way to use English Channel to support the German fleet from either Denmark or Holland and straight into the North Sea. What's fun here is that obviously Germany's in the North Sea in 1901, which is pretty special, but also the fact that you actually don't really even need that many builds to make it work. Like, if France gets Belgium and not one of the Iberians, fine. If Germany gets the Holland and Denmark and not Belgium, or even, really even just one of those, also fine. Like, whatever makes it work. Like, the position is just so completely devastating with Germany in the North Sea in 01 that, the builds aren't even particularly important. Like, you can just sort of keep them in your alliance's pocket to be taken whenever, right? So that's sort of, I guess we skipped ahead a little bit. If you're not trying to trick anybody, if you're not trying to surprise anybody, if you think maybe England doesn't know this whole Sea Lion ploy because he's a newer player that you've decided to pick on, or somehow he's hoodwinked.
Or you just want to try it. You just have a situation.
Or you just want to try it. Yeah.
Right. Well, you have a situation in which, Russia comes and says, I'm going to open north. Mm-hmm. This is one of the best situations you can have, because it's actually better if Russia just decides to open north and doesn't know you want to do a sea line. That's actually optimal.
Right, and then France is in the channel and you're like, ooh. Yeah.
So, and then you can drag Russia along just by sheer inertia. Mm-hmm. So that's great.
Yeah, and then England probably doesn't build in that case. Exactly. Unless he really wants Norway, in which case he builds, but he gambles his homeland in order to do so. So
maybe he doesn't know what's going to happen. Other situations mm-hmm. in which you might want to like be looking at this from the German perspective, an FG, and when I say this, I mean FG, not just the sea line. Mm-hmm. You know that in other scenarios, that Russia's decided to come west, mm-hmm. or that Italy or Austria or both are somehow going north and with malicious intent and not doing some other, cockamamie scheme, mm-hmm. which are, see other podcasts on that.
Yeah.
There might be situations in which you need the security of France not attacking you. And the French might just be doing it because the French are really a bit more in the catbird seat on this one. They mm-hmm. really, there's not a lot that really forces France to ally with Germany.
That's right.
The only thing that's going to do it is like dynamics, like personalities on the board, mm-hmm. Or the individual personality of the French player who just doesn't want to do an EF, mm-hmm. or doesn't want to just go it alone, or has decided that he wants to try and like take out Italy by himself. There's nothing that forces France to do an FG.
Yeah, and you're right about that, where if you're Germany and some wingnut Eastern power or multiple wingnut Eastern powers are coming your way for whatever reason, I guess you'd probably rather have France on your side than England, because if England is your sort of supposed ally, then You're probably not going to do anything to France right away because you're going to be too busy like defending Munich and, right. and whatever other things to really make much like early progress against France, in which case France, even if it's like theoretically an EG, but you as Germany gets attacked, France is just going to be like, whatever, I'll just take Iberian things and then make up my mind next yeah. year. You know, so then if this is the case, or you suspect this is going to be the case, then the ally you'd rather have is France at that point, because Absolutely. That keeps France busy. Then exactly. hey, it'll be fun. We'll go attack England together yeah. while I'm defending my homeland.
Exactly.
So there's that perspective too. If you're France, then you get to sort of go, okay, who would I rather have as an ally here? Would I rather have England and just take down Germany or along with the whole rest of the board? Or maybe I'd rather have a Germany who really needs me and won't mind if I yeah. outpace him a little bit in that situation. So I guess the question is there early pressure on Germany? Is there not early pressure on Germany? If there's not early pressure on Germany and Germany just wants to do this eyes wide open, then you can start getting cute and doing sea lion-y stuff
yeah.
or else, you know, kind of tricky stuff where you're not doing something as obvious as a sea lion, but your plan is anti-English anyway. And
yeah.
and so, something we were talking about before is before we started recording was the times when Germany can't really do that much with his opening moves that's blatantly anti-English. Like, France can go to the channel. That's
yeah.
blatantly anti-English. Germany kind of, I guess, has the choice of what to do with Fleet Kiel, right? He could
yeah.
go to Denmark or he could go to Holland.
He can go to Holland, which
but
is...
both of those border the North Sea.
Right, but in the context of the game, the move to Holland really commits it to doing only stuff against England, whereas the move to Denmark has the obvious allure of Sweden. I mean, there's really not... I agree that it's not... It's degrees, but especially in the context of what else is happening on the board, if there's something... If there's French positioning mm-hmm. that appears, whether or not it's a reality, but appears to be in conjunction with a fleet to
Holland, sure.
you're definitely, you know, you can be anti-English in a
if you went to Holland and France went to the Channel, then that looks like a sea lion.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. But,
right.
like, if France went to the Mid-Atlantic with his fleet and you went to Holland, that's not necessarily a thing. Maybe you just want to support on Belgium. Right?
Yeah, maybe.
So you go Munich to Ruhr, Kiel to Holland, and Berlin to Kiel. Maybe I just want three. You know, like, maybe I'm not really worried about the East from anywhere, and I'm just doing my best move.
Right. No,
right?
I'm not saying you can't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply saying no one... England is not going to come to you and say, why are you moving against me if you move to Denmark? If you move to Holland from Kiel, you stand regardless of anything that's going on the board. The English they're at least going to ask.
Maybe that's not why I'm not a better England player, but I don't necessarily, as long as there's no also French fleet in the Channel, I don't necessarily consider that hostile at all. You're doing it that way. Fine.
Okay, so after you take Belgium, what are you going to do with that fleet there? You just have to move it back. Why move it there?
Just for the O1 support to try and get the extra dot. But I see your point. I see your, like, it's, yes, you're right that now it's definitely in the Western theater as opposed to, oh, I can sort of wind up in the Baltic Sea or you know, Sweden or something. Like, where's my next thing that I'm doing with that fleet after that?
Even if the German doesn't intend to use it against the English when they do that, they're just like Belgium. There's a fleet that has literally very few other things to do.
That's right.
Than to support something into the North Atlantic, to cut support in the North Sea.
That's true.
I mean,
that's it. Borders the North Sea and not much else at that point. And also, of course, the other trade-off just from a Germany perspective is the fact that, like, even if your plan goes brilliantly, then after 1901 you have an army in Denmark, which always
sucks.
It's
not a place you really want to be.
No, because then you have to build another fleet, and now the English are like,
oh, you built another fleet, you know.
Maybe you have army Denmark, fleet Skagerrak, fleet, no, Helgoland? What am I trying to say here? I don't have a board in front of me.
The Skagerrak is the one that borders Holland and Kiel, right?
No,
that's Helgoland. Helgoland. Yeah, wow.
Maybe you have...
Wow, our memories are getting old.
But Helgoland borders Denmark, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And yeah, so I don't... And in any event, like, maybe you eventually, like, oh my god, I know. We don't play this game anymore.
Oh my god!
Point being, maybe that turns into a Russia attack eventually, but it's not your best Russia attack.
Not at all.
It can get there, but it doesn't start that way. That was my only point. Wow.
Yeah, that was amazing. We gotta play this game more often.
Yeah, I suppose probably. Or not just die as Germany in 1903 would help too. Helgoland, Skagerrak, what kind of extravagances are these?
To be fair,
those are those places English fleets go, right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, to be fair, they're places that aren't really, you know, in 01, which is about all, we only get to 01, you and I. We're just terrible German players.
That's right, yeah.
Anyway, so the next thing that we wanted to explore, we've talked about how,
yeah, and this can why sometimes. I guess the other thing that we haven't quite touched enough on, although we kind of talked around it, was the situation in which you intend FG, like both players intend FG, but France isn't going to the Channel in the spring of 01. We'll call that the more deceptive,
yeah.
Like. Excuse me, let's say you intend an alliance, you go Brest to the Mid-Atlantic, the German goes Kiel to Denmark. Nothing looks out of the ordinary to the English player at that point, but that's a perfectly anti-English position if you want to make it that way in the fall, if you want to make it that way, whatever other... You know, time down the line. If you want to make it that way, spring 02, using your builds, you know, and don't stab with the builds, whatever, but like it actually can be just fine. Like in fall of 01, at that point, maybe France in this gambit would take, say, Belgium and Spain, but not Portugal, or Belgium and Portugal, but not Spain, while taking that fleet from the Mid-Atlantic and just sticking it up in the Irish.
Right.
Right? Whereas the German, well, he probably still doesn't do anything directly. And, well, I suppose he could go, I don't know, Denmark to Skagerrak and army to Denmark.
It's better off for the alliance for him not to, simply because he'd be able to continue to get inside information about what the English might be doing.
German could just be neutral at that point, where the French are.
Want to do that for as long as possible anyway.
That's right.
Because
and normal German moves do look that way in 1901. They look like it's not clear what the intentions are toward England.
Unless you've organized a sea lion, and you're confident that can be executed perfectly. The better way to take out England in this scenario is for France to be the aggressor, and the German to be neutral or somewhat friendly towards the English to try and get as much information as possible. And you want to get that charade, whatever.
Whatever you like.
Whatever you like. Depends on where you're from.
We're French in this one.
We are French.
The charade.
Ah, yes. Les Miserables. Yeah. You want to try and preserve that as much as possible. You know, it occurs to me that in this particular scenario, I think, you know, this is something we should have talked about earlier. It's almost vis-a-vis the EG. Isn't Germany almost, you know, why would Germany ally with England if the French was an option? Shouldn't it almost always be that you align with the French? I mean,
depends.
I mean, from a theoretical, not personalities aside.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, the EG has some sort of mechanical niceness to it too, in that you can kind of fight Russia and France at the same time, and they can't really help each other. Right? Like, there's usually, like, a dot to find for each person on one front or the other in the EG. So the EG has some sort of, I don't know, elegance to it, I guess. So you can kind of pick on an isolated Russian North and pick on an isolated French section. It depends how successful everybody's moves are in the spring and how successful in 1901 and how successful the diplomacy is. The Germany doesn't really have to commit to either unless somebody's coming after them.
Sure.
Right? And I mean, England isn't really coming after you in 1901, no matter what England does. I mean, I guess England could convoy an army down to Belgium supported by the French. That would probably look kind of dangerous to you, but even then, he can turn around. He's in Belgium, right? Yeah, that goes both ways.
I certainly sell it that way.
Yeah. I guess I probably feel a little safer with a French ally than an English one if I'm Germany, just because the fleet thing. Like, England is just, like, so many of the German dots are border the North Sea.
And England just, like, spreads its fleet wings and just sort of, you know.
Yeah, and he's hug. Always, even if he's being, right, the hug, yeah. He always is sort of a sort of Damocles, like just hanging over there, like, oh, everything's going great right now. Everything's going great this season. At any moment, if I'm not watching my butt, it can start going not great. But, I mean, as far as the actual tactical coordination that you can do, I think maybe EG is better.
Okay.
But as far as just sort of like long-term security and stability, maybe FG might be better. I don't know. That's right. Sort of
point of this one is like is GF, and so let's say things are going well, whether or not you did a sea line or whether or not you did something else, things are going well, and for whatever reason you were able to take down England fairly quickly. It's 1903.
He's down to one.
The other side hasn't like come across the line lightning fast.
We said we'd come back to Russia really quick.
Oh, sure.
And just sort of because that sort of transitions into the next part of things.
Okay.
Russia's doing one of two things as he's realized that there's an FG. He's either piling on.
Yeah.
Because he'd like Norway or something like that, in which case the German can actually just coordinate with him. But it's always sort of a, I don't know what the right metaphor is. Like, it's always sort of like playing with fire, a little like pouring gasoline on Russia at that point. Like, oh, it's so nice to have that support out there as we're trying to kill England, but oh crap, he's in the Norwegian, and now what have we done? Like, we've created a monster at this point. So you have to be careful with that. Like, the Russian help is nice as far as the actual taking down England part, but what have you created at that point? So maybe it's a little better to have the Russian help if he's got some pressure down south, because if he's like rocking in the south and he's helping you up north, you're making a pretty big Russia pretty fast, and it might be a little more than you can handle for either power, France or Germany. In the event that he's not helping, though, that can be kind of bad for Germany, because then all of a sudden you've got the Russian helping the English guy to stay alive, and if he's got no pressure, then Germany can really, really bog down. And so sort of, I guess maybe the best of all possible situations is just to have Russia disinterested. You know,
that's optimal.
Maybe you can dangle the promise of a dot in front of him every once in a while for like a little bit of help as you're killing England, but you want him to not, even if he gets that dot, you want him to be like, oh, thank God I can build in Sevastopol now because I'm getting hammered down here. And so then he's like an ally, but an ally that you don't really have to like give anything to in the longer term. That's the Russia thing.
No, I think it's a good point taken. That really does dictate things, because that scenario, which Russia, because Russia, you help Russia into Norway, then Russia's like, so I'm going to take Sweden now, and then I'm going to build a fleet in north.
Yeah, north coast.
And then, you know, you're right, you know what? You have GF, you got a great idea here. England does look delicious. I notice it has three dots, and there are three of us.
And now England's so mad at us that he's convoying Russian armies onto the island.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe I'm just remembering that recent game with Dan Lester at World DivCon, where he soloed as Russia in this exact situation, where David Hood and I did a sea lion to Peter Jurgen, like a real honest to God sea lion to him, and then Peter Jurgen was just like, oh, okay, Dan gets it.
Party for Dan!
And Dan won the tournament. Mm-hmm. Oh no, he came in second. That's right.
Anyway.
You've got to be a little careful with that, especially if your Russian is Dan Lester.
So, all right. So that's the context of Russia in that scenario.
But so to take it into the mid game there now, at some point Russia becomes a thing, right?
Yeah.
Go.
What do you mean Russia becomes a thing?
Well, I mean, so you started a long time ago before I interrupted you.
Oh, yeah, but about the scenario. So it's actually
England's down to one,
and we're assuming Russia hasn't gone crazy here because you managed to do this and you've kept Russia a little bit at bay. Mm-hmm. Sort of your next step as the German is Russia.
It's gotta be.
And the reason I'm hesitating a little bit is that I'm thinking right before I speak, and you know, it's not as if Russia doesn't know that.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It's a little bit. That's why probably England only still has one left, because Germany was trying to get the jump and wants to turn on Russia before Russia preemptively hits him. So you don't have time to grind England entirely out, otherwise,
without putting some stuff on an Eastern front, and not only Russia, honestly, there's those situations too where there's an AI that's doing fairly decently. Just as you're taking down England, AI starts to think, "Hey, look at all that Northern Germans out there. Munich looks delicious right about now."
Yeah.
Or like even AIR can happen to you if you're Germany. So the more chaos there is in the East, the more likely it is that you can keep going with this and like actually like be go on offense next. That's the bad news, is that you need chaos. The good news as a German is that your dots aren't actually that far away if you manage to go on offense. So like you've taken down your England, now all of a sudden there's all this Scandinavia, there's all this St. Pete, there's all this Warsaw, Moscow, even Vienna is an option. Like, there's close places to go once you're done with England, if you've gotten a couple of builds.
Right, and you don't have to, and the thing about the FG is, like, you're not worrying about France crawling through Burgundy and into Ruhr and Munich. Like,
typically.
That's what you're, you know, you now can just fully deploy in whatever direction you want.
If France is building how he said that he was going to build, and
isn't just coming in to crush you, sure.
Yeah, right. we're eliminating the, okay, we killed England, now let's stab each other.
Yeah.
Possibility for purposes of this show.
Like, I mean, you're certainly going to...
That'll happen.
If you're either France or Germany, or in particular Germany, you are, before you, during your negotiations of how to slice up England, this is after the ball is dropped and like it's okay, we have England understands that it's an FG, Russia understands that it's an FG, this is what's happening for the next season or season and a half, we are executing England, we're just going to do it very efficiently. After that is, while that's happening, your negotiations with France need to be along the lines of, okay, we're going to partition up this way. We're going to build this way, because here's the next step. I mean, you need to be talking about that plan well before it's actualized.
Yes, for sure. Can get awkward because there's, you know, there's Belgium to talk about.
Yep.
There's the English dots, which are kind of a dead end, and you need to claim them, but then sort of DMZ that island if you want to stick with this, because what you don't want is like, oh, we've all gone our extra directions, but there's one German army left in London, and whoops, he just went and took everything else on it. You know, like
that is the problem with taking out England, is that it's not just that it's the corner of the board, it's the corner of the board like on an island.
The bottom of a toilet, basically.
It's awful, because, you know, it's, if you can do it, if there's somehow you can do it, like being able to strand England there somehow, I don't know how you do it, but just being able to do that and then moving on and not worrying about the dots.
That's right. 1, 2, 3, we're both jumping off the island right now. 1, 2, 3, okay, we're off the island.
This is one of those scenarios in which you need to, you know, a lot of people like, you know, negotiate maybe this turn, and maybe if it's a fall turn, you talk about the builds. This is a scenario in which you actually need to be a little bit farther about it. You need to be negotiating the mid-game, if you really want that to happen.
And you are right that at this point, Russia recognizes, assuming Russia's not a big part of this, at this point, Russia recognizes, okay, England's all dead, right. Germany's not distracted anymore, I need to be working on him full-time to stab France.
Exactly. So he's going to be pushing.
And that actually, you know, maybe for another episode or something, that can work too.
Oh, sure, yeah,
Like you go ahead and hop in bed with Russia and go stab France just like he wants you to, and that can actually be a good game for the Germans. Great. But again, not
we're just assuming right now that you are maniacally into this FG.
Mm-hmm.
Listener, you really want to make this happen.
Yeah, so I think what we're like almost both getting to here is the fact that what you've been planning this whole time is when England is dead, Germany goes after Russia and France goes after Italy.
Right.
Right? Because what else are you going to do?
There's nothing else
at that point. And so you're talking like, all right, you're Germany, if he's building fleets at all, he's building them in Berlin, but he's probably mostly building armies to start that Eastern offensive. France is building as much as possible fleets, right? And particularly southern fleets, unless he needs to build two at the same time, because Brest is fine too.
It's not that much. You want to be able to. The problem with this is that there's the coordination that can happen, assuming that France doesn't have so many builds that it can spare a fleet to go north.
Right.
It's conceivably possible if Russia's a big deal, like France could send a fleet north to kind of help it out. But generally speaking, the coordination is going to happen in the Tyrolia, Piedmont sort of center area.
Yeah, and then where it can bog down because it's a stalemate line, and those are hard. And so ideally at this point, like, Italy and Russia are both in some sort of disarray, and or Germany can be talking to Austria. That's another thing we haven't talked about yet. Like, if Austria is doing well, he can be a great friend at this point. Like, if I'm Austria and I see, like, a successful FG, I'm usually going to the German and being like, okay, you guys finished that up, so come on down. We'll split up some Warsaw, some Moscow. And again, you know, you're kind of playing with fire there because you don't want Germany to do too well, but
it's also
you can coordinate.
A viable triple alliance, assuming that Turkey is not just... assuming Turkey is not expanding rapidly, and because if you take out Italy and Russia and try to go with just Austria, and Turkey is not otherwise neutralized, you're going to have some problems. But
I suppose if you're looking for the long term three way on this board, you're going France, Germany, and then either Austria or Turkey.
Yeah,
right.
More likely, it's going to be Turkey, unless they were just blown out.
If you started with say an AIR, let's all kill Turkey fast kind of a thing,
then maybe
the Austrian loves this because you're like, okay, someone to pick on one of my allies, somebody to pick on the other one of my allies, no one to pick on me. And so that can actually go pretty well for an Austrian if he lives through the early game, right?
If the heir's successful. So, I mean, I guess that's fairly obvious. I don't know. We don't mean to belabor the point. Like, mid-game, there's really only one option for each power to really focus on.
If you want to stick with it. And I guess maybe the interesting thing to say about it, if there's anything interesting at all to say about it, is the dynamic of... for the German, there's a lot more possible perils at this point in terms of Austria, Italy, and Russia all being possible, like, foils to this plan is the bad news. But the good news is the dots are easier to take.
Yeah, you're right. You're right on top of them. And then when you build another one, you're building it right on the front.
That's right.
As opposed to the French,
who the dots are harder to take, but he's probably not in any mortal danger.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so the French guy will slow down. It's hard to get, like, once it breaks through, it's not necessarily impossible, like, to get, say, Naples, Rome, and Tunis in pretty quick order, right? But breaking through is going to be tougher. The trade-off is he's probably not in any mortal danger from anyone except for the German.
Right. And when he does take things, he's got to get him to the front because probably Marseille's clogged up, and he's got to get him there. So,
or even if it's not, it's not particularly close to Italy. Yeah. You've still got to go Marseille, the Gulf of Lyon to Tuscany or Tyrrhenian or something like that. So it's his next dots are a year to year and a half away, even for the next couple, and that can be fine because he's got nothing but time at that point because he's France and no one's going to hurt him except Germany.
Right.
But
we're not setting it. So let's say for whatever reason you've made it, you've navigated the mid game such.
England's broken, Italy's broken, Russia's broken.
So how do you make
broken.
It how do you make it work?
You're both at 12.
How do you make it work beyond the mid, let's just assuming the mid game work, like what is the secret to getting FGGF through to the through to the mid game and then beyond that? I guess that's basically the question. Like, how do our listeners, because they desire it, how do they make it happen? Clearly, they need to attack Italy and France, Italy and Russia. But what is it that they're saying to each other that to make it happen? What's the motivation? I'd say
most of the time it's the scenario that we already talked about, where you wind up with either Austria or Turkey as your friend.
Yeah,
and you wind up with a nice happy three-way. And you're done with your game, and that's fine. Or you get to the point where it looks like that's going to happen, and then one of you steps the other and goes with the solo, which is fine. Or there's somebody in the East that's doing well enough now that now FG has to play defense.
Right?
Like, maybe you didn't do as well as you thought you did, and there's someone in the East who's doing well enough that you've got to make a line. That's quite easy to do as FG. If you find, we're the West and somebody's trying to get over and get 18, like maybe Russia or any of them, really, that's actually fine too, because you've got the perfect home centers.
Oh yeah,
to do that.
I mean,
right?
I guess that does probably benefit. We weren't extolling very well, given ignoring everything else we've said. If you know the chips are down, FG are aligning because they can just lock. They can lock up most of the stalemate line.
Definitely.
Very easily.
You're extremely happy that those happen to be the two powers if it turns out that's what you have to do. Because, look, I can build Marseille. Sweet, I can build Munich and Berlin. Nice. You know, like, whatever. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I've got northern fleets. Oh, my God, me too. You know, like,
OMG!
Yeah, exactly. Oh, all I have to do is have one thing support the Mid-Atlantic, and they're done that way. You know, so...
Yeah.
That's good news if you're playing defense. If you're still playing offense, it's a bummer if it's some coalition of two powers that feels like they need to stop you. Like, there's that line down there, like around Austria and Turkey, where they like hold 13 centers against some Western coalition.
Yeah.
Like, they can do that kind of stuff, and maybe it turns out being two of them, you have a bummer four-way draw or something like that. But
you're never. Yeah, that's neither here nor... I mean, it is here nor there, but, like, you're going to get to a point where...
Something else is going to happen.
Something
first.
Else is going to happen, because you're not going to get to a two-way. That was the spoiler we said at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
The only way I could think of to do it would be if, like, France actually gives Germany two of his own home centers and manages to take all the southern stuff. It's actually more possible than the other possible Western two ways. I'll say that.
Like, you think, and it like EF is that's a, that
it's there's no two way there. There's just not.
Oh, there is.
I'm remembering back in my little stalemate brain that I still seem to have a little of it. It like, I guess FG could do something where like Paris and Brest and. Maybe even Portugal belong to Germany and France has everything else, but you know, and Germany has like northern Russia, like point being, it ain't easy.
You have to work really hard.
It would be like really artificial, and I can't think of a situation where it would happen unless you were just trying to do it on purpose to force a stalemate. Realistically, you're not going to do that, and so you're going to be left with the typical dirty tournament player things where you like persuade people that no, we're going for 17-17 here, you know, concede now, Turkey, just
give up.
We're just gonna take Smyrna and then we'll both be at 17 and you suck and we win, or whatever. But as far as forcing it, no. As far as if you want to do it,
meh. Yeah, I mean, you could
get that far.
I suppose you can make it work. I think it just seems, it's very unlikely.
Yeah, it's extremely.
And we say that because,
like any other alliance,
yeah, most of them are tough. There's some ones where you can do it a little bit more safely. This is not one of them.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, Germany's either really, really close to a lot of centers, or the French have broken through very quickly before the Germans can get to all those centers, and you know. I guess we want to say that simply because, you know, this is more an alliance of... You should not expect this alliance to go the distance.
That's right.
You should be looking for a third leg or looking to solo.
To solo, yeah. Be aware that this one, like a lot of the other ones that we've talked about already, it has a shelf life.
Yeah.
It might not be as short as some of the ones we've talked about. It's maybe not as short as, say, AI or AT or something. But it has a shelf life, and so don't plan on sticking with it the entire game. If it works out that way, great.
Great.
And
just expect the stab, I guess, is around
in the absolutely. There's the game. Just like any other alliance, there could be that one term where France builds two and Germany doesn't build, and all of Germany's forces are way far away in Austria and Russia, and France builds two, and it's like Army Paris, Army Marseille, and you're like, oops.
Oopsie doodles.
Yeah, so if you're growing, grow at the same speed. If you want to keep the thing working, just like any other alliance, there's the stab. If the stab comes between one of these powers and the other, it can be really ugly really fast because the home centers are pretty close to each other, like closer than, say, if England is a part of it or something like that. Like, at least those are neutrals that the English player will usually grab first from whoever his ally is, whereas, like, Army Paris, Army Marseille is just a bummer, you know? Or, like, I've even said, like, maybe the one that it's, like, just Army Munich.
Yeah,
when that's not expected, and there's just nobody home.
Yeah, in there's France. Like, oh,
like Burgundy boy. And whichever one I want, and then and that can really tank it really fast. So, I mean, and I guess you could do artificial things like, oh, well, I'll just leave an army home in Paris forever. You just leave one in Munich forever, and we'll just bounce in Burgundy every turn or something like that. That's
not a bad idea. That.
Yeah, that's a good way to keep it safe. Burgundy is always going to be the trouble spot.
Absolutely, of course.
By the way, we haven't mentioned Burgundy at all.
I mentioned it a couple times. The word Burgundy has come across.
Seems important.
Yeah, no, but, you know, I think we've kind of explored this topic. But what about if we ask someone who's English?
Now that we've plotted ways to take down England, he's going to tell us all the ways that we're going to fail at that as an actual English actual person.
Yeah, and I assume he knows.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, he knows how to resist Germans.
Oh yeah,
okay. I that's a safe thing. Sure. God, that got like dark in a hurry. Toby Harris after this.
Yep. Toby.
Joining us now, the champion of this year's WDC in Milan.
Yeah, from across the pond, as we like to say on this.
From across the pond?
Yeah.
What part of England are you in, Toby?
Droitwich, it's Worcestershire, and then in Shire.
That's right. It is. Congratulations, WDC champion, so you get to be on the show. Toby Harris, welcome.
Hey, I was doing some research online. He's a lord.
Lord Toby Harris.
Yeah.
Right, there it is. Yeah, right there.
That's what Wikipedia can help you with. That's really good.
Yeah. I'm no lord, but guys, thank you ever so much for the invite and the welcome.
Well, that's what we do.
We invite, we welcome.
We welcome. And then we really just really hope that you're going to be entertaining. That's kind of how this works.
Well, that's the objective, isn't it?
At this point.
So, Toby, I know from just reading online and from talking to you at WDC and Dixie last year, I think it was last year, you've been kind of after this win for a couple of years. Is it, what, 2 or 3 years you've been trying to get a win WDC?
Yeah,
39. Yeah, right. It's like 2 or 3, except it's almost 40. That's an amazing amount of dedication. When do you start when does the 39 start? When did you start in the counter?
started when I started playing at the age of 9. A cousin taught me the game, and I've loved it ever since. It's been a way of life. It becomes a religion in a way, doesn't it, to a lot of players. If you love diplomacy, then you love diplomacy. It's that simple.
I'm totally with you. I love it too. I'm just sort of staggered by 9. 9's even impressive by like Nathan and my child prodigy of diplomacy.
Yeah,
yeah, really good.
That is.
Well, it says 9 up on the box. That's the one thing they need to change. You should be 9 and up.
Yeah, that's right.
It's definitely like an Eddie Verson approach. Like, they got the box wrong. You got to change it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's wrong. Hasbro.
Hey, when my lad was 9, when my son Kai was 9 years old, I'm going back 3 years now, I got him into a Facebook game, and I told a lot of other world champions, only world champions welcome. They all decided they wanted to play, or 6 of them did, and then I announced it's not me playing, but my 9-year-old son. But it's a Dumbo, no press game, and Kai went on and he went to win as Turkey, and he was 9 years old. So there you go. His first game when he beat not the 6 world champions.
Royal blood.
Yeah. As the other 6 guys just spent time trying to figure out who the 9-year-old was and was all convinced that it was somebody.
Yeah, right.
Everyone did, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm sure that's what happened there.
Diplomacy is not for everyone, unfortunately, but those that love it, they love it for life, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So tell me, like, this was, you know, WDC, you're there, you're it's in Milan? Is it not in Milan?
It's in Milan.
It was in Milan. It was, yes.
Milan, not Milan.
Well, depends on what side of the pond you're on.
Yeah.
The American accent, the English accent is very good, isn't it?
They both suck in Italy.
except for Toby.
Yeah, right.
The only thing that really disappointed me about Milan is that I didn't really tell any lies this year. And actually, I found that I did better by being more honest with people than by stabbing players. And ultimately, you've got to change your style of play over the years. You have to, otherwise you become too predictable. And this year, I just thought, well, I'm just going to try and be honest with players. And it works.
Already something about this story.
That's great. I mean, we're definitely, we're telling people that on the show every once in a while. Like, you know, a lot of times being honest, the honest approach, not only are people sometimes suspicious and not really expecting it, so you end up getting a leg up anyway, it's a lot easier to sell the truth than it is to sell a lie sometimes. Although,
I think it's very helpful with both.
Yeah, you're like, you're an equal opportunity. Yeah, you're like, right. I'm just comfortable with doggy.
So, but let's break that down just a little tiny bit. First of all, was it like this standard European C Diplo type scoring system in this?
Oh, I didn't even get the scoring system. It's some crazy Davide Cleopatra scoring system. You had to keep everybody on 3 centres. I think if you had 16 centres and 6 players are on 3 centres each, you have more points than if you had an 18. So I'm not entirely sure how it works. But yes, there's a break, a score if you get 3 centres more than the next player, which is good. I like that if you're well in the lead. But generally speaking, just win your boards if you can. That's the general rule of diplomacy.
Yep. So then the sort of being honest strategy, like I associate the I didn't lie very much strategy with something where like it made sense to try and have some long-term allies. And were you finding that was your MO of this tournament?
Actually the games went in 2 ways. The first style of game, because there were 5 games over the weekend, the first style of game was actually in hiding behind bigger guns than myself, like Cyril Savan. You know, people don't want to see somebody win the world. It's gone 4, 5, 6 times, and that helped me in a couple of rounds. Obviously, in the final, because Cyril was there, and he was Germany and I was England, but in another round too, I played several world champions in 1 game, and what I found was that for the first time in many years, that they're actually the other players would go in for those guys rather than me, so I just lucked it up.
That makes sense. A lot of the strategy had to do with you kind of being well known there and then being even more well known, and so you decided to kind of be the I mean, would you say you played with a pretty decent percentage of the people at that tournament before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The other thing is, the one game in particular, the game that really swung it for me and catapulted me onto the top table no matter what, I only actually took about 10 or 11 centres, I think, but I believe I was playing Austria, and I believe that I had a possible shot at 18, because of, in my view, if you're playing Austria, there's just one thing you need to achieve in 1902, and that's to get an army in Albania and a fleet in Aegean. I got that, and once you set up with that, you're done for life. And I really did feel that the 18 was on the table, but I wasn't going to stab the ally just for the sake of a few centres and getting what? It doesn't matter. You get to the top table, you're on the top table.
How many people were at this event? I can't remember.
Say again?
How many people attended? How many players?
I think it was a very small as far as World Bitcoin goes. I think it was five or six tables per round. If you place it on five, so that's 35. There's probably about 40 players there over the weekend, okay. Maybe 45. So it wasn't big.
Yeah. No, but it wasn't small either. It wasn't like, you know, that's a decent sized tournament at any other event, pretty much.
Well, my view on that is it's important to get the quality.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can have, you know, it's not impressive to beat a field of 80 if, you know, half of that field has ever played before. You know, I mean, I think that occurs at some WDCs, or it has occurred, where you have just an overwhelming amount of people that are really just more or less filler. So, I mean, I was just curious as to see how many people were playing. I wasn't suggesting, Toby, that you only won because so few people attended.
Yes.
No, it's fine. Look, Maleski turning up with a Mexican hat. I do wonder if ever it travels through Mexico, what it would be like to have a couple of hundred people all turning up with the same big hat and how to get past each other on the plane. It's just crazy.
I see what you did there.
I gotta recover from that.
Yeah, I
like it. So, is there any like reflections from the event that you wanted to share overall? And then, I guess as a follow up for that, I mean, I think you've already mentioned your secret to success this time around. But any tips you have for folks trying to go to their WDC and trying to win one, we'd like to hear about those too.
Oh, there's no actual tips as such. I mean, I'm obviously very grateful for the award, and my wife's been very happy to actually have the trophy in the front room for once. But the trouble is, it can't go out in the garage with the others because the shelf's a little bit fragile and it's made of glass. So that's that. So it'll stay in the front room for a couple of months. But, guys, you know, I'm obviously really happy to have won this. I can't get over saying that, really, but ultimately for me it was all about this has been a lifelong ambition for many, many years. I'm really pleased about it, and it felt very warm to get some of the praise from some of the other guys. That was really well appreciated. I didn't sense any bad feeling from anybody for the whole weekend, and I think the only sad thing is I always actually prefer to be one of the rebels who had never won a World Dipcon. Then I could take the piss out of the far past world champions, you know? Mm-hmm. And say, well, you world champions, what are you up for? But now I'm in that club, I kind of prefer to be out of it again. But I guess the only thing to do now is to try and go and do what nobody's done before and win it again. And that's the attitude, hasn't it?
There you go.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, once you win it, it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the next thing?
Or you could do what I did after I won DipCon, which is just go and, like, lose at absolutely everything for 2 years so that no one even remembers and start making fun of world champions again.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Before we move on to the next subject, Nathan, you've had a baby recently, haven't you?
Yeah, she's in the other room.
No.
She is indeed. She's about 4 months.
And is she your first or more?
First.
Well, I just want to say many congratulations.
Thank you.
You're going to have, you've got years ahead of having a wonderful, wonderful time of being a father. I have to say, being a dad of a girl is very different to being a dad of a boy.
We have one of each, right?
Well, I've got two lads and
Yeah,
one girl. The first lad's from a previous, but
I got.
And Eric, have you got children?
Nothing doing on that front, no sir. It could still get there one of these years.
Yeah,
you never know. Yeah,
he's actually in a very similar place. He's 39.
Yeah,
this could be his year. I mean, he's just
right.
Trying. It's been an ambition since he was a young lad.
Really, we're just procrastinating.
It's a 39-year ambition.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Maybe a year ambition.
Taxes.
To make another me.
Yeah.
Let's see. On the tournament thing, I felt like I had one more question. Is there anything? So you mentioned the first board being Austria, and that was sort of like an interesting kind of personality thing. Are any other of the boards stand out? Did you sort of earn yourself kind of a couple of points every board and find that you were sort of on the top board at the end, or were there a couple of eliminations along the way and a couple of big results?
I think the board you mentioned was actually my third. The first board, I think, was a second place, which was a good start. The second board was a win. The third board was this one where I think I could have grabbed an 18, but all I had to do was... Well, sorry, don't think I could have grabbed an 18, but I had a shot at an 18. You know how these things go when you go for 18.
Yeah.
You can't foresee necessarily getting it, because obviously players sort of all buckle up and stop you. But all I took there was a tabletop. Now, the fourth game was probably stood out the most, because it had in that game, as EF and G, three players that were guaranteed to be on the top table regardless of what happened, even if we were eliminated. So I was Germany. I invited Italy to take Munich off me. I basically invited the Wolves to come in and have a piece, because I didn't give a damn. Frankly, if you're on the top table, you're on the top table.
Sure.
That's the thing. And what I saw in that game was Ruben Sanchez, the second guy in the tournament eventually, he played it like a normal game of diplomacy. He was very nervous. He didn't want to lose centres. He was worried. I've known Ruben for many years, and what he showed to me in that game was nerves and a bit of weakness. And that carried forward, I think, into the final. He was less relaxed. And I think to win a World Dipcon, if I were to give any word of advice to anyone, it's not strategic advice or diplomatic advice, it's just relax, enjoy the game.
Calm down.
That's a relaxant.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
the top table, what power were you on the top table?
I played England. And I was very lucky in many respects, because I was sharing a flat with the Australian Peter McNamara. He was Russia. With Cyril, he was Germany, and with Dave Simpson, that's Cool Dave to you guys. He was
fun. Well, Cool Dave.
Oh, I like Cool Dave.
Yeah, friend of the show.
Cool Dave. So, funnily enough, my three neighbours were the three guys I shared a flat with. It was pure coincidence. Never come across that before.
And, that's creepy. Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt that nobody had the inclination to attack me. Whereas a lot of others had the inclination to attack the other guys. So, hey, guys, the final wasn't my best game of all time. It was just, I just played it by the rules, played it by the system, and just played a normal, solid game. Didn't make any mistakes, but it wasn't a game to specifically say, well, wow, that was the best game of my life. I think I played a better game in round three.
So... You're pretty happy with it. I mean, obviously you're happy with the result. You're happy
Absolutely.
With the tournament. You're happy with the trip. Were you there any longer than just the event, or you was sort of there in and out and that was it? Or did you have some social time? Did you have time to interact with the players, or did you really just pretty much wander in, win, and just go back to your hotel room?
Peace out.
Oh, no, guys. I never go to World Dipcon or Euro Dipcon to to do that. I always go for the social, and some of it was just wonderful. I mean, Marco Ferrari, the Italian guy, he had about six or seven people back at the back at his house. That included Tom Haver, the current world champion at the time. Cyril, I think Cool Dave was there. You know, there's a few good guys there. And the funny part of that was, I mean, Marco was just brilliant host, bringing out loads of plates of spaghetti, parmesan, and loads of bottles of wine.
But nice.
When he kept bringing out a new bottle of wine, he kept showing me the label, and I don't know why the hell he did that. You got a Frenchman in Cyril stood right next to me, and there's me who's just going to drag it by the neck. I mean, Cyril was disgusted, and he said, "It's fine."
I like it.
Great night. But why show me the bottle's label, you know, when I'm just going to drink the stuff, and Cyril's going to appreciate it.
Because it's hilarious. Show it to Toby.
Yeah. Troll the French guys.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, actually.
Here, is this one going to be okay? Yeah, it is. It's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
It could just say just wine on it in big letters, and I would say, yeah, I love that vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know those nodding dogs in the back of a car? I was just doing that the whole time.
Yeah, just like, So it sounds like it was the best of all possible rollouts to you. Not only did you win the event, you had a great time at it, and that's exactly why everyone should go to a WDC. So,
don't get me wrong, there will always be a little bit of cliqueness in so much that people know others and they've known them for many years, but usually anybody that turns up to a WDC, whatever side of the water, they will find new friends and they will be welcomed into new societies, and it's worthwhile always, definitely.
So is that why you're sort of gearing up to host a WDC in a couple of years here?
No.
That's a rumor I kind of heard.
No, the rumor is, and it's been accepted. It's Dan Lester who's hosting.
Oh, okay, but you're not going to have any part of that.
I'll help him in any way that I can.
Yeah, you understand that means you're doing most of it, right?
not a chance. I can do what I can do, and I will help.
Congratulations on
HarrisCon. Yeah, but I'm sure you'll be doing. You're a prodigious, let's just say, advertiser. Booster. I like that. You're a booster, and you do spend a lot of time spreading a message, which is a skill set that Mr. Lester does not have in the online sense.
No, he doesn't go Facebook very much, does he?
No. He doesn't go email very much. No. But, so...
He's a cracking guy all the same, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. But I think you're going to end up getting a little bit of recruitment there. Where is it? It's in 2017. Yeah.
That's right, in the city of Oxford. And Dan's obviously got a background in Oxford, having come from Oxford University. And I cannot move away from this subject without touching on the last World DipCon in the USA, where Dan arrived a little bit early, got very well sunburned and turned bright red. Now, there was a cheese in England called Red Leicester.
Yes, there is.
That was him.
Red Leicester.
That is excellent.
Second, came on the show. Yes,
yeah, it's it was good.
That's also where I met Toby Harris.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Can I just good time. You guys, you work so well together because Nathan, you've got such a sort of fun kind of upbeat voice, and Eric, you've got such a deep authoritative voice, and together you really act really well on the radio show that you do.
Yeah, it does work that I have no idea what I'm doing, and Eric is running things.
And I'm good at sounding like I do know what I'm doing. So, no, thank you for the compliment.
So it's in Oxford in 2017, and just early plug, do we happen to know the dates?
For World DipCon in 2017? No, I haven't heard from Dan yet. Okay. I've sent him emails galore.
Sometime in the summer, probably August.
Yeah, I mean, the implication was quite clear that he would do it when the students were away from the university, so it's going to be the summer, so that we can get the halls of residence quite cheaply, which is the way to do it in Oxford. That suits me, because it's outside of rugby season. And in terms of the accommodation, it'll be much cheaper that way.
Good plan. Yeah, we did a similar thing when we did it in Vancouver, BC, over here years ago.
That's how I did it. But
I attended.
Dan's a very clever individual, and he does a lot of stuff with thought. And I've got a lot of respect for Dan. And I'm certain that his ideas, from some of the ideas he's passed on to me, I just think, wow, this guy really does have some great ideas for a World Icon. And I would urge everybody to come to that. Not just because he's a good guy and all of that, and it's a World Icon. I just think it's going to be a special event.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be amazing. And you're going to have, I imagine, just streaming across the water there, across the North Sea, across the English Channel, a lot of the French and a lot of the Germans coming over.
Naturally, but what really struck the Europeans was the fact that Dan's well connected with you guys over in the States, and he's going to get you guys streaming over.
Right, but to tie this into the topic that we had during the show, you know, with the French and the Germans coming over, it's sort of a natural, as you said, it's quite natural that they'll kind of stream over. If in the game, France and Germany, we were talking about how that alliance works and how that goes together.
Toby, Nathan worked so hard for that thing.
I know where we're going to now, the FG alliance against England.
Come on, it worked. It was a nice segue.
Yeah.
So we had talked about some of the reasons that FNG would get together, the circumstances on the board. Curious if you have any initial thoughts on it. It's not one of those alliances that people are like, oh yeah, the FG or GF or whatever you want to, however you prefer to alphabetize it. You know, there's not a lot of people that I think it's a go-to. And so in that way, we thought it was a good idea to chat about it. So if you have any initial thoughts, great. Love to hear them. And if not, then just from the English perspective, would be also fascinating.
Yeah, of course. I mean, thousands of ideas, to be honest.
Let's start with your top 10.
One or two will do. I mean, firstly, there's the England-Russia alliance, which is incredibly powerful. That would stop it dead. In my opinion, the England-Russia alliance is 10 times more powerful. So let's start with that. And that's Russia opens Warsaw to Silesia, Sevastopol agrees something with Turkey, Black Sea bounce, whatever. Moscow goes to St. Petersburg, and England does the English Channel and North Sea. And what happens is that Russia is allowed into Norway, and in return, because he's upset Germany by moving to Silesia, you know Germany's going to move to Sweden, Russia moves to the Baltic Sea instead, and England gets the convoy to Denmark. I mean, in my opinion, that is a lot more powerful than anything France and Germany can do, but the trouble is you have to start that in spring 1901, and that doesn't counteract any potential FG alliance against you if you haven't gone in that way. So the most powerful FG alliance, in my opinion, is France opens the channel and then supports German fleet Denmark to North Sea.
Right.
That's the nasty sea line that I mean, I've had that done to me in a World Cup of 99, and Simon Bouton was Germany. What Simon didn't bank on, though, world champion though he is, was that I was going to move North Sea to Holland, and that really pissed him off. Sorry, excuse my French. If you are facing an FG alliance, the thing to do as England is North Sea to Holland. Don't even think about anything else, because it's not about denying Germany the build of Holland. This is about bouncing Kiel to Holland. And that means Germany can't build a fleet there. So if he does build a second fleet, it's in Berlin. It takes a long time to get to you. That's England's best defense. North Sea to Holland, without a doubt.
Yeah. That's a good point. And then, meanwhile, it also, in addition to slowing the German down, it sort of picks one of them to annoy more than the other one, and you can hope that by destabilizing there, you can change somebody's mind in 1902, right?
Absolutely. And the other two key principles that I work to actually date back, from my perspective, to when I was a child. I'm going way before I was 14 years old and back to the original UK dipzine days. And there were two principles that I learned. The first was in a dipzine called Watch Your Back, edited by John Wilman. And what he wrote, and I must stand by this today, it's brilliant. And that is, you write as England to France in the first year, first turn, or in this case, you go and talk to them, and you say, any funny business from you in 1901, and I will build Fleet Liverpool. And more importantly, if you do get any funny business, you stick to that promise. You do build Liverpool, and that's what you must do. So the trouble with France, though, is often you don't see that funny business until the Fleet Rest is built.
And even then, the French credit player can often argue some other reason that he did that other than funny business. Right,
absolutely. The other thing, and this is perhaps more quintessential to the game as a whole, is the very basic principle that in postal diplomacy, and this does apply in face-to-face, you write to every player every turn. You've got nothing to say, so if you're England, write to Turkey every year. And I do this as a habit in face-to-face, even if it's to say to Turkey, well, we haven't got much to talk about, but I just wanted to come and say hi. That's all you need. Because what happens is, when France and Germany do attack, you can then call on Italy and say, hey, guy, come on, how about this Piedmont move now? And Austria, how about Bohemia?
Yeah. So a lot of it, if you're an English player and you're being attacked, I mean, if you can get Russia on side, that's great. And by the way, I'm putting a pin in that whole ER gambit that you mentioned at the very beginning.
Yeah,
and I like that. I hadn't heard it quite that way before. But so just a lot of it is just stalling, holding out, and trying to destabilize, and then hoping to get help from the other side, right?
Absolutely, because imagine you're playing France and you're attacking England and Italy moves to Piedmont, or if you're Germany attacking England and Austria moves to Bohemia, or there's an attack in Tyrolia, eventually the attack stalls, and that's all you need. I mean, it's fairly obvious to say, well, always keep an army at home is England, all that sort of stuff, but ultimately the diplomacy plays its part here. It's more than just a strategy game, and you need to get the other players on the other side of the board on your side. It's not just about your corner, it's about getting everyone.
Yeah. Do you ever, what are your feelings on playing an FG? If you're in France or Germany, and actually let's do it from the German perspective. So if you're Germany, are you ever leaning towards an FG? Is it something you ever do? I mean, but with a huge parenthetical caveat, understand you're playing the board, you're playing the people, et cetera, et cetera. That aside, are there times when you're just like feeling, like I'm with France? Is that something that do you like it? Do you have an opinion on it?
Oh yeah, I love it. I mean, look, the FG Alliance is probably one of the most powerful on the board if you can get it right, because they are two of the most powerful countries to begin with. You probably know the phrase that if you have to play a game of diplomacy to save your life, you choose France. And Germany's not too bad either, let's be honest. So as an alliance pair, Germany and France are just brilliant. But as to whether I prefer to ally with Germany or England or Russia, I'm happy with any alliance, to be honest. And I think you have to be as a diplomacy player, because if you're rigid enough to say, my favourite country is, and it has to be France, and my favourite alliance structure is, and it has to be France and England or France and Germany, then I think you're screwed before you even started playing, because that's not the way to play diplomacy. It's about diploming.
Yeah. I agree. There's times that it just makes sense for a personality reason. There's times that it makes sense for this is going on the other side of the board kind of a reason, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the best way around this, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And if you ask yourself, which is your weakest country, which country do you hate the most? If you go back many years for myself, it was always Italy. I absolutely hated Italy. I thought, what a rubbish country. You take Tunis and then you do nothing. You're on four centres for the rest of the game. Well, come the first World Dipcon, I played Italy to Sean Derrick's Austria. And what happened was I misordered Naples was I think in the first turn, so I was guaranteed to get no builds. And in 1902, I managed to get Marseille, Fred Davis, obviously a very famous American player, and took Tunis, and ended up in a great alliance with Sean Derrick. And after that game, I made it my absolute determination to understand how to play Italy. So the Manicom team tournament, which is obviously a seven-a-side game, I made it my habit to play Italy every year and understand how to play the country better. And what I've understood about Italy is actually it's a hell of a lot better than most people give it credit for.
Don't get me started. I could not agree with you more.
Italy's rubbish. You take Naples.
I totally agree. It's a great country. Yeah. I love it.
Absolutely. Italy's a brilliant country. You can dance and sing with it and do all sorts of cartwheels.
Yeah, absolutely. And nobody's ever expecting much from them, and so you can you can change direction if you need to. And yeah.
No, it's good stuff. Come on.
See, where we
come on.
Is that your analysis?
Yes, so I wanted to bring a lot of insight into this particular topic. I'm going to come on.
As Italy or any other country, you've got to be able to play any country. And so the best advice I can give to any player is pick the worst country, the one you hate the most, and then play that country the most. Get to learn it, get to understand it, because only if you see how to play it yourself can you understand how others are playing it and then get to appreciate the game. So make your weakest country the one that you practice the most.
Yep. And I suppose, just from a practical perspective, there's one truly random thing in diplomacy and nothing else that's random, and the truly random thing is what country you get.
Exactly.
I got Cyril is Germany and me is England.
See, there you go.
That's right. Yeah, and all four of your housemates on the top board are in the same part of the board.
It all definitely does help. What else do you want to tell us, Toby? I mean, I know that you had some ideas that when we were chatting about talking to you, you had some things you wanted to talk about. Is there anything we missed?
Well, at the moment, you've got a theme tune that's, is it David Norman's sister going? Deadline.
Yes.
That was the only thing that I stipulated when I had our editor make that thing in the first place. I said it has to have David Norman's sister counting down from 10 to 0 in it. You can do whatever else you want with it.
Do you know her personally?
But I feel like I do because she's like stressed me out at so many like WAC tournaments and other East Coast events. Yeah.
We all feel like we know her.
Yeah, exactly. And hate her.
And the music that you play, what's the music that you play with that?
That's all from a previous band that I was in, so it's all instrumentation from, it's all original stuff that we do. It actually happened. Yeah, and then actually we do have to update it because I have a whole new project now with way different music, so I have to do samples from those.
Let's go ahead and be a little precise for a moment here. Nathan sings in the band.
Oh, yes, okay.
All of what you're hearing the show is people playing instruments.
Yeah, so there's nothing that I do except for, cut it with a device. I haven't done any of it, but I get to claim it.
It's Nathan's bandmate.
It's my bandmate.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
I don't play anything. I just I'm just the heart, soul, and only reason to watch the band.
Driving force.
Yeah, driving force, inspiration, soul. I really think soul is the right word.
Amazing. Well, the important thing is you enjoy it, you know, and that's what matters. I've only stuck with diplomacy because I enjoy it. I'm a very lucky guy in so much that when I got married, because we lose a lot of people when they get married and have children, and I'm lucky in so much that I said to my wife, look, I'm not going to do 6 or 10 tournaments a year, I'll just do 2. That's the tip I would give to anybody who's got a family and they don't go from 10 tournaments a year to nothing. Just drop it down to 1 or 2 big ones, and that's what keeps people playing. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. Trying to keep people in the hobby, playing the game. You can see the fruits of it. Those who've had kids, often they just drop out completely.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, right, or they just wait until their kid's old enough, like you're doing, and introduce them to the game. I mean, my understanding is, like, the first time you played the game, like, your reaction was to, like, kick the board over.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
No, you've got to hear the true story on that one. You've got to hear the full story. I went to the toilet, and my cousin was there. We talked about the game, and my brother and sister and a couple of friends. So I went to the loo. I had my orders in. I went to the loo. I came back, and they were reading my orders out to each other and then changing their orders to reflect what they wanted to do. And I just said, that's not fair, and I just kicked the board over. I haven't done
that. Well, that's not fair. We actually covered that earlier in this show. That's
yeah,
the
right.
One thing you can't do is read the orders once they're in the box. Anything else you can do.
Anything else you can do. And then one other question I just realized, because we're getting towards the end of this excellent conversation. There's probably another couple of questions after this, because I know...
I want to ask him some questions.
Yeah, I know. You always have your final thought, but what do you see as the future of the hobby? We talked about how you're going to be attending a WGC on the island here in 2017. What do you see in the future for the hobby as a whole?
And before you go there, if I can just weave in, if you're currently involved in any sort of like hobby organization stuff or like new player stuff or some local tournaments in England, we'd be curious to know about that too.
Well, trying to answer you both, I mean, in terms of the future, we've got over 1 billion Chinese players that are just itching to be stabbed. Eddie Burstan, as you say. Burstan's going over there with Fang in August to play in Shanghai, and I think that's great. I really do.
Yeah.
And I've seen the agenda there. But Fang's emailed it through. They've got a good tournament structure. Eddie's giving them the team talk and all that sort of stuff and the pep talk. Let's hope Eddie does a good job, because
he's like our Richard Nixon.
It should be Kissinger. Kissinger played the game.
But he does do a great job, Eddie. To be fair to him, he's going out there. He's the first out there, exploring virgin territory. I just wish I was there with him to go out and do the same. I put my name down for next year, and I think that's great. So first and foremost, there's new hobbies popping up all the time. The Italian hobby, for example, didn't exist 15 years ago in the UK. Sorry, in Europe, it was England and France always, and then a bit of Belgium, then Sweden, then Germany, then a bit of Austria, now Italy. So it does change. But the Chinese hobby, that's a good growth area. So that covers one area. The other question was about the what am I doing to promote a hobby? Well, I guess I'll just be me.
Yeah. Well, you're a hell of an advertisement on your own. You know, all you got to do is show up and smile and play, and people are like, "I want to be that guy."
You love it or hate it, and I understand that not everybody likes what I do, and I don't expect everybody to like what I do. But if it gets a response, then at least everybody's talking, and that's important.
Definitely.
So I just wanted that's a rosy version of the future. I like it.
The China thing. I guess if Eddie Burstan comes back from China and all of a sudden we have like 200,000 more downloads than we had in our previous time.
That would be the trick.
Don't
you usually ask a question here? What is it?
We haven't done this in a while.
I was just remembering the thing we always do and half the time forget to do.
Exactly. How do we use the phrase of the thing you regret the most that you've ever done, or the dumbest thing you've ever done on a diplomacy board?
Yeah, it's just sort of a... Yeah, it doesn't have to be a play on the board. It just has to be associated with diplomacy in some way.
If anything comes to mind, otherwise we'll just edit this out.
Well, I guess, what, you're looking for humor? You're looking for sadness?
This is completely... You own this.
Well, so we started asking this question because... I think it's fun for newer players to hear the really great players tell a story of, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. That was really idiotic, so that they can know that when they do an idiotic thing, it happens even to the great ones.
I've got it. Yeah, it was the Eurodipcon, the Gwen Maggie one, about 3 years ago in the UK. That is system whereby the highest seed picks the first place and so on and so forth. Do you know that? Where you, exactly. And I basically was the top seed, so I got to pick first, but I chose to have something like second place. So then Maggie was second, says, I have first place and I'll take France. Anyone?
Oh,
I'm an idiot. What have I done? Even before the game had started. Now, the game was quite funny because about halfway through, Gwen was obviously winning, and Dan Lester started reading out the orders. He was Turkey, I was Austria. And he goes, yep, that's a move away from Gwen, and there's another Paris to Burgundy, and no, sorry, Munich to Silesia, away from Gwen. And every order that Dan Lester read out, he followed it with the words, away from Gwen. And it just had us all in hysterics. Total cock up on my part.
Gwen's hypnotism. Yeah, no, I actually played under that system for the first time pretty recently, where you get like a seating and you get some country choice.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that if it gets more popular and more people start doing it, we might have to kind of all sit down and talk about the tactics of it, because there's no question in my mind that people were doing it wrong.
Yeah, there's an optimal way to deal with the situation.
Nobody really got it. People weren't negotiating, which you really should have done. You know, like, you really should have been talking to each other as the choices are being made. There's a lot to that. But yeah, sometimes you don't outthink yourself. Sometimes go first and pick France.
Yeah, exactly. I got it wrong.
Yeah.
And Lester was absolutely a joy in that game. And just, I've got to end, before we leave on this, I've got to say that when Dan stabbed me in that game, to be fair, I had a little pop at him at one point and he had a pop back. But when he stabbed me, he just came up to my ear very quietly and went, right in my ear. What an annoying git.
That sounds like Dan. Sounds a lot like Dan.
Yeah, he's very funny. Clever guy.
More of a face stab than a backstab.
But you don't mind it, do you, really?
No.
Fun of the game.
I enjoy a good face stab, actually.
Well, all right, Toby, any parting thoughts for us? Anything you want to tell our listeners? Anything you want to tell us? Anything you want to say?
Just to say, guys, thank you very much. I wish you all the best for your show. It really does come across well. So I'm very honored to be here, and I look forward to seeing you in Chicago next year.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely be there.
For sure. Glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for doing it.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Make a noise, we need a new outro. Come on, Myrna. Come on, Myrna. You're totally not going to do it, are you? Oh my god. She just yawned.
Say something.
Oh. Now I feel bad. For Eric Mead, this is Nathan and Myrna Barnes signing off.
Sad time.